Hey, what you're about to listen to is the podcast version of what was a live radio segment on KPFA. Consequently, when you hear us give out a call-in number, you don't want to call it. If you're listening to this as a podcast, it is already too late, and nobody on the other end of that phone number is going to have any useful answers for you. All right, let's go to this week's Corona Calls. We're going to turn, as we do most weeks at this time, to new developments in the world of COVID-19. Our guest is Dr. John Swartzberg, Clinical Professor Emeritus of Infectious Diseases at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. Good morning, Dr. Swartzberg. Dr. Swartzberg, you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Okay, we can hear you now. I wanted to devote most of today to listener questions, since we had a long queue of people on the phone lines last week who we weren't able to get to. So we'll take new questions in a moment at 1-800-958-9008. Before we do, I want to kind of start where we left off the conversation last week, which is just a temperature check on what you think general COVID levels and the general risk is right now. Now that the summer travel season is over, people who go to school are mostly back in school. What is the threat of public indoor gatherings compared to at other points of the year?
We don't have as good a data today as we had previously in the pandemic. But the data that we have all points to California in general, certainly Northern California, having a high degree of COVID circulating. We make that statement based upon a few parameters. One is the wastewater data that remains very high here in California, higher than most states, interestingly. The second is the percent of people that go in to get care because of a respiratory tract infection, either upper or lower, and they test positive for COVID. And that number is significantly higher than we've seen in a while. Actually, it's higher than we saw during the last winter wave. So that tells us there's quite a bit of disease. The other parameter would be to look at hospitalizations. And hospitalizations are pretty flat, slightly going up, but that data lags behind where we currently are by at least a couple of weeks. And then the other piece of data is deaths, and deaths are pretty stable, maybe going up slightly, but again, that data lags by about a month. And the final piece of data is anecdotal, and that is I know several people currently who have COVID, and during the more quiet times of the year when COVID is not wreaking its ugly head up, I don't know anybody. And I talk to friends and they know somebody who's got COVID. So I think you mix all of that together and you come up with the conclusion that there's a lot of COVID circulating right now. But I want to put that in perspective, Brian. Mm-hmm. And that perspective is that the number of people hospitalized right now and the number of people dying from COVID, while really so unfortunate and so tragic when people die, it's a pittance compared to where we were in those really dark times of the winter of 2021 and the winter of 2022. So we're in a wave now, not what we used to call surges. There's still a risk of getting really sick. There's still a risk of dying, but it's much less than it was at an earlier time in the pandemic.
All right. We'll take questions for Dr. Swartzberg at 1-800-958-9008. That's 1-800-958-9008 for your Corona calls. And the first I will take from the inbox. This comes from Sam in Oakland, who wrote late last week. I am a healthy 68-year-old man. I'll add in parentheticals. That means he is eligible under the current FDA guidelines for the vaccine. He writes, my last vaccine was early May. I have a family function coming up in a week here in Oakland, and I'll be flying to New York for a function in early November. Is it reasonable to get my next vaccine this week?
Well, so Sam is certainly a candidate, as he says, for the vaccine. And He's four, a little over 4 months out from being vaccinated. Often you'd say, well, wait till 6 months, do it twice a year, wait roughly till 6 months. But Sam makes the important observation that he's got a big event coming up in a week, and then following that, another big event with travel. So I think it would be very reasonable for Sam to say, I think I would like protection for these events. One little caveat is that ideally you'd like to be vaccinated 2 weeks before a big event as opposed to 1 week. But with these boosters, you already have some immunity, and this would still give you some boost to that for that week event coming up. So a very reasonable choice for Sam would be to get vaccinated now. Yes.
All
Let
right.
me ask one thing, Brian.
Sure.
Sorry, but I've had a lot of people ask me, they say, well, is there any danger of getting vaccinated too soon? I think we've missed the boat in terms of how we public health has communicated this. There's no danger to getting vaccinated sooner. It's not going to hurt you, make you more likely to have a reaction, et cetera. But the problem is that you may not get as much of a boost if you do it too often. So that he may not get as Sam may not get as good of a boost as he would if he waited till 6 months, but still it would be pretty good and protect him for those periods of time when he's at higher risk.
And that's a short-term consideration, right? It wouldn't like permanently degrade his response to vaccines. It just means this particular booster might not generate as many antibodies as it would if he'd waited a couple more months.
That's right.
Okay. Super helpful. Thank you. 1-800-958-9008 to put your corona call questions to Dr. John Swartzberg. First on the line, we've got Phil in Oakland. Good morning, Phil.
Good morning. I am just getting over a case of COVID. I am flying to New York on September the 25th for 2 weeks. I'm going to a wedding in Baltimore. I'm going to be seeing a lot of friends in New York. I'm 89 years old. Should I, because I'm concerned that maybe the COVID that I had didn't have the strains that might be covered by the vaccine. Should I get the vaccine now?
Important question, Phil. You do want to have optimal immunity when you're going to be in situations where you'll be at significantly higher risk, the travel and these occasions with lots of different people. The good news for you is that you've essentially been immunized with this episode of COVID you've had. That's like getting immunized with the vaccine. And the protection you're going to get from that vaccine is going to last you. You're certainly going to be well covered for the events you're going to. For the first 3 months, you're going to have very good coverage. Now, I want to make sure you understand that there's no guarantee there that you will be protected against COVID, but you're going to have optimal coverage against it when you travel. Getting another vaccine on top of just having had COVID will be essentially of no value to you. You're just getting over COVID now. To get a vaccine before you travel would just not give you really much of anything. You're going to have really optimal immunity from having this infection.
To an answer another part of Phil's question, he asked if getting the vaccine would give him immunity to newer strains of the virus in circulation. I assume if he is getting over an active case in COVID, his immune system has been exposed to the most up-to-date version of what's in circulation.
That's right. Thank you, Brian, for reminding me of that. Right now, the gorilla in the room, that is almost all the infections we're seeing is from a subvariant called XFG. It's a subvariant of Omicron. And so when you travel, that's likely what you're going to encounter, and you're going to have really good protection against that.
Phil, I am glad to hear you made a good recovery and that you have some fun activities planned. And hopefully, you're relieved to hear that you don't need to take the time to go get another shot. All right. Next, we'll go to San Pablo, where Jay is on the line. Good morning, Jay.
Good morning. Good
What's your
morning.
question?
Well, I'm sick. I I've had it for about 5 weeks, and I have absolute. I had a real severe first week, and then I kind of got a little better. Then now I have no appetite, and I have terrible ataxia imbalance. And I had my last booster in May, and I'd really like to get connected with a long COVID doctor in the East Bay.
In the East Bay. Okay. Let's find out what we know about resources. And I'm really sorry to hear it going through that, Jay. Dr. Swartzberg, who is trying to do long COVID treatment and research in our region?
Sure. Yeah, and I'm going to second that, Jay. I'm really sorry you're having problems with this. It's a good reminder that even though, as Brian and I were discussing at the beginning of the show, that serious cases of COVID are down, that doesn't mean that people aren't getting serious cases. So I'm sorry this is a problem for you right now. The first thing I would do, Jay, would be to see your physician. Not necessarily a specialist in long COVID, but see your physician to make sure there's not any other explanation for why you're not doing well. I don't want you diagnosing yourself. I want you to do this, be diagnosed in conjunction with your physician. So if she or he checks you out really carefully, doesn't find anything else, you're on the cusp of having long COVID. We typically say it's about 2 months after you had your acute infection. If symptoms persist, you would fall into that category. But you're at 5 weeks now. So first stop with your physician to make sure everything else is okay. If you're not better and nothing else shows up, then pursuing some help from specialists in long COVID would be appropriate. The two best resources that I'm aware of, although there are certainly private physicians that have expertise in this, but would be the Long COVID Clinic, either at University of California, San Francisco, UCSF, or the Long COVID Clinic at Stanford. Both of those institutions have had long COVID clinics since early in the pandemic when we first recognized this problem. They're very experienced with it. They have protocols going on for different ways of intervening. So that's where I would go if nothing else is found and you continue to have these problems.
Jay did ask about places in the East Bay. So if we stipulate that UCSF and Stanford have the most high-powered long COVID clinics, is there anything closer to home for him?
The recommendation I would have would be to see a board-certified infectious disease specialist. And there are several here in the East Bay who are very, very good.
Dr. Swartzberg, most of us, when we meet with our physicians, particularly if we're in a managed care system, have to go in kind of prepared to advocate for ourselves. Is there any kind of test or blood work that someone in Jay's position should be asking about? Has the field settled on any biomarkers for long COVID or for ruling it out?
There are some biomarkers, meaning tests you can do, blood tests you can do that might suggest long COVID or at least a variant of long COVID, but those are really done in experimental programs. They're not for prime time yet. There's no test that a doctor can order that is going to say you've got long COVID at this point, and that's really frustrating. I think a lot of that, Brian, has to do with the fact that long COVID is a human construct. We've created this idea of long COVID, but under that umbrella are lots of different manifestations of people just not doing well after an episode of COVID, and it persists for a long time. And each of those may have a different mechanism for why they're occurring. So if somebody's telling you that they have a test that they can do that's going to diagnose long COVID for you, I would be skeptical of that.
Right. We've discussed this before, but we could kind of postulate many, many different mechanisms by which you would feel lousy several months after having a COVID infection. One might be persistence of virus somewhere in your body. Another might be autoimmunity. Your body's response to the virus has now turned on your body itself. A third might be just the infection was so severe it did some kind of lasting damage. All of those might produce symptoms, but would suggest very different courses of treatment. And we've lumped them all together because they're all things someone might experience several months after a COVID infection appears to have cleared.
Well said, perfectly said.
Which makes it incredibly vexing for anyone suffering with those conditions to try to get to the other side of it. Good luck to you, Jay. Let's go to the North Bay next. Laura is on the line in Santa Rosa. Good morning, Laura.
Hi, I live in Northern California, Sonoma County, where you say there's high COVID. Thank you for saying that. I didn't know that. I wanted to ask you two questions. One question is, I'm 79 years old. I had only my COVID, my first one in 21, but I've never had a booster after that. I don't believe I have had COVID since then. I didn't have symptoms. So I've just gone on with my life. I'm 79 years old. So my question is, am I entitled to a COVID booster? And two, how do you know if you've ever had COVID? Is there a test that'll indicate if you've ever had it? I'd like to know if I had it and never knew it. You see what I mean?
Yeah,
But I
I do,
don't
Dr.
know.
Swartzberg.
Those are my questions.
Thanks, Laura. I do see what you mean. So you're 79 years old. You had the initial vaccine several years ago, but you haven't had a booster since. And now you recognize that there's a lot of COVID in the community. Are you entitled to a booster now? The answer is absolutely yes. Anybody over the age of 65 or over isn't eligible to get the vaccine. Anybody younger than 65 with certain predisposing conditions that predispose you to a bad outcome is eligible. Frankly, everybody 6 months of age and older is eligible here, will probably be eligible here in California very soon. And I understand that Kaiser is now offering the vaccine to everybody who is 6 months of age and older. So yes, that's a long answer to your question. Yes, you are entitled to get it. The second question, how do I know if I've ever had COVID? There is a blood test your doctor can order for that will show if you have antibodies to a certain portion of the virus that would not be that you would not have if you were vaccinated only. If you have those antibodies, then that would tell us that you have been exposed to the virus before, you've been infected with it before. And you make a very interesting, important point, and that is you can get infected with the virus and not have any symptoms. Not a significant, but a certain number of people will get infected with the virus but not get symptoms, or they may just think they have a very mild cold.
I mean, this is one of the reasons that the spread of the virus was difficult to contain, because there was such variation in symptoms. You couldn't reliably say just quarantine people who had a fever, because some people would be spreading it in a presymptomatic or asymptomatic state.
That's right. And that's a big difference between this virus and the virus that caused SARS back in 2002. And that is SARS in 2002, a very similar virus to this particular virus, only spread when you became symptomatic. But the virus we're dealing with now, as you just pointed out, Brian, people really need to remember this, can be spread by asymptomatic people who subsequently will become symptomatic, are asymptomatic people who never become symptomatic, but they can still spread the virus. So you can't look at somebody and they look healthy and they're not coughing and their nose isn't running and you think, well, they couldn't have COVID. They could.
All right. Dr. Swartzberg, to Laura's question, So a test exists. I guess this looks for antibodies that respond to the nucleocapsid part of the virus.
That's right.
I understand as a matter of curiosity why you might want that test, but as a clinician, would there be any reason to order it?
None at all. It really would be a matter of curiosity. I can't think of a reason to do that unless there was some important reason that you documented in that person that they've had COVID in the past. The big mistake somebody could make, and I suspect this is what you're getting at, Brian, would be that, well, the test shows that I've had COVID in the past, but I never had any symptoms. So I guess I'm not going to get sick if I get exposed to the virus again. And please don't make that assumption. That would not be correct. You could get sick and you could get very sick.
Even if you had a mild case before.
That's correct. And you could get long COVID. A mild case.
So I guess we might end on a buyer beware note here, Laura. You asked about whether you could ask your doctor for a test. You could, and they might order it. And they might also say, because there's no reason relevant to your health care to order this test, if you get it, you'll have to pay the cost of the test yourself. All right. Let's try to get one more caller in from the Central Valley. We've got David in Clovis. Good morning, David.
Good morning. Thank you very much for doing these programs. It's just wonderful. My question is this. My daughter-in-law needs to see her newborn niece or nephew, who's being born one of these days, and she needs to get a COVID shot. What are her rights to getting a free shot anywhere?
We're assuming she's under the age of 65 and otherwise healthy?
Yes, she's 32, I think.
Okay. Yes, Dr. Swartzberg.
This is part of the mess, David, that the FDA and the CDC, and therefore the head of HHS, have got us into. Just a chaotic mess. If she's a member of Kaiser, she could go in and get that right now. If she's not a member of Kaiser and gets private insurance, we don't yet know whether private insurance will pay for it. California is just in the process of, and I don't know if they've passed this law yet, that will allow pharmacists to give it if people are 6 months of age and over. So I think she may need to sort of call different pharmacies and see what their policies are. This is just a ridiculous problem that our government has got us into. Our government, talking about the federal government, not the state government. Our state government's trying to bail us out of it.
Yeah, emphasis on the call ahead, because even when California changes the rules to make it possible for pharmacists to issue the vaccine themselves to people who are under 65 and otherwise healthy, it might take a while for that news to reach a given pharmacist. You just don't know what you're going to be dealing with unless you call ahead of time before you head over. Dr. Swartzberg, thank you so much for spending another Monday morning with us.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right, that does it for this week's edition of Corona Calls. If you want to send in a question for next week's, you can email coronacalls@kpfa.org. Or tune in live to Call In Live. Usually we air Monday mornings right after 7:30 news headlines on KPFA 94.1 FM in the Bay Area or kpfa.org anywhere in the world. We put a little bit of extra work into repackaging this live segment as a podcast because it feels like the information is useful to a lot of people. And we ought to make it accessible through as many channels as possible. You can help us get the word out by rating and reviewing it in whatever app you're using to listen. And if you want to pitch in some cash, we wouldn't say no. We always take donations at kpfa.org. I appreciate it if you mentioned Corona Calls when you make your pledge. My name is Brian Edwards-Tiegert. I hope you have a great week. Stay well. We'll talk to you next time.